you know, with or without alien spacecraft or the other colorful stories about what might be out there in the desert, Area 51 would still be a fascinating place. You know, long before the Bob Lazar story broke in 1989, there were whispers about other projects out of dreamland, technology that might as well be alien because it was so advanced. You know, that base, that facility at Groom Lake remains a vital resource, a key testing range for the development of platforms and programs that keep us all safe. So what is out there? What are they working on now? What have they done before that we haven't heard about? DreamlandResort.com is the central hub, a clearinghouse of information about Area 51. Jörg Arnau is the webmaster, so he gets to see and hear it all. He has a team of researchers, including people who used to work out there, who share information with him, and he posts it all on the website. He not only hears it, he lives it. He is a resident of Rachel. That's the town that's closest to the base itself. He's the webmaster for the Rachel Town website. And that town, of course, is going to host one of the two events planned for September 20th and 21st in Lincoln County, despite some pretty significant challenges. Jörg is very outspoken what he thinks about these events and has great insight into what's going on at Area 51 now. And he joins us in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. It's kind of hard to remember a time when we all weren't aware of Area 51, when it wasn't sort of a world-known brand name in a sense, when it didn't inspire E.T. highways and AAA baseball teams and video games and rock songs and a thousand other commercial products. But 1989, pre-Lazar, there wasn't a whole lot of coverage. You know, people who lived in Nevada had heard about it. People who worked out there or lived in proximity to the base. Aviation buffs, people who followed aerospace stories, things of that sort were aware of it, but not much was known. And there was a reason for that. It was and is vital to our national security. And there's an element of secrecy that's needed. So when the story broke out about this storm Area 51, it began as a joke, but suddenly it looked like it was going to evolve into something else and has. One of the first calls I made was to Jörg Arnau, the webmaster at DreamlandResort.com, and he joins us now. Jörg, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, George. Hi, and thank you for having me on the show tonight.
Hard to believe it's the first time you've done this.
Yeah, actually, I've done this many years ago. I've been on the show, probably 2001 or 2002.
Oh, okay. Well, it says first-time guest on our list, so I guess it's been long enough where they didn't remember it. Let me get into the Storm Area 51 stuff, because you have a unique perspective, both because you're the webmaster for the town, for the webmaster for DreamlandResort.com, and because you live in Rachel. So when you first heard about this plan, what did you think?
When I first heard about this Facebook event, I thought, well, there's going to be a few people that show up, and they're going to be out in the desert and maybe camp and tell each other a few stories, and then after the weekend is over, go home happy. The more this whole thing started taking shape in the media and was picked up by the media, the more it became clear to us that this is a very real movement, and that we will that we have to prepare for potentially thousands of people to come out here. Now, let me say right up front, storming Area 51 is a really, really bad idea. It's not going to happen. The government keeps that facility secure for, 65 years now? For a very good reason. They are developing the next generation aircraft there that keep our country safe, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that a little more during the 2 hours that we have. Storming Area 51 is a bad idea because the base is so secured, and if you wanted to get in there, it's not going to happen. If you get 10,000 people together and 10,000 people start running through the desert and do a mad dash to Area 51, they're not even going to get anywhere close to the base. From the highway, it is 15 miles to the perimeter of the base, and then it's another 12 or 13 miles to Area 51. So Between that, you're crossing a mountain range. Of course, the base has all kinds of sensors. They pick up people approaching. And right now, they are, of course, on high alert, so they probably have some kind of crowd control weapons at their disposal, sound weapons or some kind of non-lethal crowd control weapons. So people approaching the base, who knows, they might just fall over, wake up 2 days later with a terrible hangover and go home and wonder what happened. They are not even getting close to Area 51.
On high alert, you know that. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they read the newspapers and they look at Facebook. They know what's coming. They take this very, very seriously. Everybody takes this event very serious.
Well, now, but in the beginning, I mean, we all thought it was a joke. We never, you know, it the creator of the Facebook page said it was a joke, and suddenly it morphed into something else, and real plans are being made, and now it's pretty much a certainty that at least some people, maybe thousands of people, maybe 10,000 people are going to show up, and you got to believe that at least a couple of them will be dumb enough to try it, but they will be intercepted, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the sheriff's office is going to have pretty much everybody at their disposal out there. They have requested assistance from neighboring states, from neighboring counties, rather, and they have declared a state of emergency for the county, so there's probably going to be state assistance there. We're going to have all kinds of departments, all kinds of agencies out there. And, of course, you also have the Air Force police on the inside of the base. Nobody is going to storm Area 51. They can try, but it's just not going to happen.
We'll come back and in a couple of minutes and talk about the levels and layers of security, because you're very familiar with the various systems that they have out there. But let's stick with the event itself. So the event that George Harris talked about down near HICO, his part of the, on his side of the Area 51 or ET highway, is moving along and plans are progressing, as we just heard. What do you know about the Rachel event, which Alien Stock is the name of that event? Where do things stand there?
Yeah, that's really a big concern for us locals here in Rachel. We don't really see much progress. We are not involved in the planning. The little alien really doesn't keep anybody updated in town as to what is going on, what their plans are. All I really know about what they are planning on doing is what I heard at the commissioner's meeting. And, you know, it's just, we are very concerned about the number of people. We are concerned about the people that are involved in planning this event really don't have a lot of experience in this size of an event, in planning this size of an event. We're talking about potentially 30 to 50,000 people in a town of 50 people. So we're potentially exponentially increasing the population of our little valley here by a factor of 1,000. Nothing here is designed for that. The roads are not designed for it. There is no infrastructure. There is no gas. There is no store. There is no nothing here. There is a little alien is the only business in town. They have, seven motel rooms and some campsites. It's not even going to make a dent in the demand of people looking for places to camp, looking for food, for gas. God forbid if something happens, if people have accidents, there is no medical. The nearest hospital, there's a small hospital in Caliente, but they're really not equipped for any emergencies. The nearest hospital is in Las Vegas, 2.5 hours away. There is no infrastructure, zero here in Rachel, and we are very concerned that this is going to be an issue, that people are coming out here not knowing what to expect, and with no experience camping in the desert. I have a few pointers on my Dreamland Resort website and also on my Rachel website. But, you know, people really need to understand that this is a serious desert environment that we have. We have coyotes here. We have all kinds of, I've seen mountain lion once here in the valley. You know, there's wild animals here. There's snakes, scorpions. People need to understand this is the desert, and they can't just come out here and lay down on the ground and camp. They did in Woodstock 50 years ago. This is not the environment for that. And so we are concerned about the safety of the visitors, and we are also concerned about the safety of the residents. We have...
Yeah, when you see the proclamations that say we're going to take over Rachel, that's scary.
Yeah, that is scary. I mean, and we are scared. We fear for our properties here. I can't say it in any other way. You know, Rachel is not designed. People in Rachel are used to leaving their doors unlocked because there is no crime in town. And, you know, this event is going to attract any crooks of any flavor. You're going to have people pickpocketing the crowd. You're going to have burglaries in town, and then you're going to have these YouTube generation people that basically vandalize homes of residents for YouTube hits, for advertising hits. We had a situation like that last year where a YouTube video surfaced of a home in Rachel being vandalized, being broken into, and the people just went through the home, filmed themselves doing that, and put the whole thing on YouTube. We know you... that 90% of the people coming out here are good people that want to party, that want to experience it, go home happy. Great. But there's at least 10% that we're worried about.
You led the delegation, a small delegation of your neighbors from Rachel, to the Lincoln County Commission meeting that discussed permits for the two events on the two ends of the ET Highway. What did you tell the commissioners, and how did they take it?
I had a list of concerns that we came up with. Pretty much some of the concerns I already mentioned, for the safety of visitors, for our own safety. And we asked that because there is just not enough time to prepare for this event. It came upon us so quickly. Large events of this size normally take 6 to 8 months to prepare. We had 6 weeks. So we are just not ready for this. We are not prepared to handle this. And the only way we see to prevent this disaster is to close the highway. So we asked the commissioners to please shut down the highway, post signs down by I-15 where people are starting to drive up in this direction, and let them know that there is no event in Rachel, the highway is closed, and there's going to be possibly an event in Heiko. Josh Harris seems to have a much better handle on things down there. This request was basically the commissioners didn't go for it. They didn't feel that there's a reason to do so, and they didn't feel that we can shut down the highway.
Also that people are going to show up anyway, so it's best to try to prepare for it, right?
Well, if you close the highway, people can't show up. There's really only one highway that leads in and out of Rachel. If you close it, people won't get here. So this is not an option. So then the second suggestion was, okay, so at least close the residential part of Rachel. You know, the frontage road, it is very centralized in the center of town. That's where the event is going to be. So we asked, okay, can we please just have the event grouped in such a way and maybe postman roadblocks at each of the 5 roads that lead into town, and not let visitors into town. That also was not adopted by the commissioners, and subsequently the event permit to the Lalaylee was granted, even though in that same meeting, Corey Lytle, the director of the planning department in PL, which in our county seat, said that the requirements and the specifications of this event still change on a daily basis. So they issued the permit for an event where they don't even know exactly what it entails, what the event is going to be.
There is another county commission meeting in between now and when the event is scheduled. So I think the permit was provisional, that they will check in and see what progress has been made. I guess, you know, in a sense, the Little Ailey Inn has a long history there. It's sort of the unofficial town hall for Rachel, the meeting place. It's the business that's known all over the world. So you have to kind of root for them to do well, and I hope it goes well for them. Have you spoken to them? Are they speaking to the other residents there about the concerns?
I've contacted them several times. I can't get them to get back to me on my concerns. I talked to them briefly at the commissioner's meeting, but all I want is to know, okay, what's going on? What are they planning? Where are they planning to put people? We don't even know. I have a map of campsites, but we don't know exactly where they're planning on putting people. I wish they would be open for a dialogue. I wish they would be open to talk to us, but as it is right now, we kind of feel left out, and that worries us because we don't know how well it is going to go. Is it going well, or is it going to be a problem?
You know, it's almost 30 years since the stories that we did had helped to stir this up. And I can't tell you how many times in between then and now that people have proposed the same thing to me. Hey, let's all get in our RVs and drive across the line. They are not going to shoot us. They won't stop us all. As if they would discover the secret saucer lair. And I've always given them the same advice. It's a bad idea. And yes, they can stop them. I'm sure that you have been hit or heard those same kinds of plans over the years. And in fact, you've been involved in other smaller events, demonstrations sort of at the line, at the perimeter of Area 51, and even a small, tiny event creates problems, right?
Yes. We had in 2005, we had an event for the 50th anniversary of Area 51 that was founded in 1955. We gathered maybe, I don't know, maybe 50 people, if that, near the warning signs on Groom Lake Road. We had to jump through all kinds of hoops. We had to get event permits. We had to get BLM permission. We had to have porta potties there, and we had to have security, parking, enforcement, and this was an event of 50 people. We had a little traffic jam on our hands on Groom Lake Road of people arriving there. Again, this is 50 people. We're expecting up to 50,000 people here in Rachel. I don't know how this is going to play out.
Are your neighbors generally united in this? Is there a faction in town that supports it? Because, I mean, it definitely would be good for business, I guess, at least to some extent. One business, anyway.
Yeah, unfortunately, this has already split the town. There are those that want to rent out their lots, their properties for campsites, and of course they support the event. And then there are those that really are here in Rachel because a lot of us bought property in Rachel because we want to retire here.
I'll tell you what, hold on, York. We're going to have to go to a break right now. I want to come back to that about who moves to Rachel and why. We're talking with York Arnoux of DreamlandResort.com. Talking with York Arnoux, webmaster for DreamlandResort.com, the sort of the all-purpose authority on all things related to Area 51. He's also the webmaster for the town of Rachel, which is, as we've just heard, kind of divided about plans for this big storm Area 51 event that's now being called, at least this part of it, Alien Stock. It's plans for a music festival and arts and other attractions there in Tiny Rachel in Lincoln County, Nevada. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with York about how it's divided the town, then get into Area 51, what's flying around out there in the desert. We'll be right back. Jorg Arnau, before the break, we were talking about the number of people who live in Rachel and your community and how it's this issue of Storm Area 51 or alien stock have kind of divided the folks out there. Let me ask it this way. Why did you move out there and when?
Yeah, I moved here in 2000. I bought property, I should say, in 2003 and slowly developed the property. You have to put in a well and a septic system. I mean, it's not, there's no city sewer and all this. So it takes a lot to develop property. I developed my property here over the years, and a couple of years ago, I finally built a house, and I'm looking to retire here. There's a lot of us that came to Rachel because it is a quiet, safe community, and it's beautiful scenery, of course. My interest in Area 51, of course, helped choose the location, definitely. But we all really chose Rachel because it is a quiet place to live, and there's a lot of beautiful desert around. We can tool around on our quads and explore, go hiking in the mountains, and it's just a beautiful environment. We didn't sign up for a big event like this. That if you had told me a year ago or 6 months ago that this might happen, I would have said this is absolutely crazy. This is never going to happen in Rachel. Rachel is always going to be this sleepy little town, and we're going to have some UFO tourism here and people that come out here for the aerial war games. But an event with 30,000 people, absolutely never going to happen here. Well,
I mean, clearly it's not for everyone to live out there. As you mentioned, there's no gas station. There's no store other than the Alien, which, you know, I love that place and always enjoy visiting it. But other than that, there's not much at all.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I like the little Alien. I've been friends with the owners for years and years, pretty much from day one when I started coming up here. But yeah, it is a very out there place. We are really cut off from the rest of the world by the whole test site. We're on the north end of the test site, Las Vegas on the south end. So we're kind of sheltered, shielded from the rest of the world up here. And we, most of us here, like it that way. That's why we are here. And like I said, we would have never in our wildest dreams expect an event like this to come down our little community.
Well, I think basically we got to hope for the best, hope that the plans come together, that that somebody gets a handle on it, and that the private interests of the residents can be protected, and the desert's protected, and everyone goes home safely. But we'll have to see. Have to check back in.
We'll definitely hope for that. And I want to make sure that people understand, I don't want to come across, we don't want visitors. We welcome visitors here. We help people out when they come to visit, and, you know, people run out of gas, whatever. So we embrace visitors to the area, but 30,000 is just a little too scary for us to even deal with. So if you come out here, if listeners out there planning to come out here for this event, please be prepared, bring whatever you need, bring food, bring water, bring gas, and be prepared to camp in a desert environment. Know what it takes to camp in a desert environment. You're probably going to have a good time.
Let's talk about the base itself. So separate from the event, whether anyone tries to storm it or not, I've always been fascinated by the layers and levels of security. You know, years ago, some people first discovered the motion sensors that are out on public land miles away from the perimeter of the base, which itself is miles away from Groom Lake facility. So let's talk about those layers, starting with the motion sensors. You've seen them, I'd imagine, and I imagine there are other sensors that are stashed out there.
Yes, I have seen the motion sensors. In fact, I was very much involved in this whole incident years ago, digging them up and all that. there's a lot of photos of the road sensors on my website. Some of them are up to 10 miles outside the base perimeter on public land, on the side of dirt roads. So people approaching on Groom Lake Road or on the road that goes to the back gate of Area 51, you're tripping all kinds of sensors, and that lets the base know that you're approaching. They know how fast you're going because you're tripping a number of sensors, one after the other. And that's just the first step. Then there's cameras around the perimeter. There's a big, big remote-controlled camera on Bald Mountain. For people that maybe not that familiar with the area, when you come down the ET Highway, Bald Mountain is the tallest peak in the Groom Mountain Range. You see a little facility up on top. It's a radar facility, and there's a big remote-controlled camera mounted to that that can cover the entire valley. There's also infrared sensors. There's cameras, and in the recent years, since 2012, 2013, all the way through 2016, the base has installed a whole new network of cameras around the perimeter, infrared cameras that pick up intruders. So, and that's really only the outer layers of security that we can see. And then, you know, once you get, if you were to get inside the perimeter, which is not a good idea and which is not going to work, but then you're dealing with more sensors. You're dealing with, of course, what we call the camo dudes, the security forces that guard the perimeter of the base. And quite likely, further on the inside, you're dealing with Air Force police and who knows what else.
You had, I remember when I was first reporting on it, some people who had worked out there told me that there are sensors that can distinguish the human smell, that the smell of humans versus other animals that might be in the area, and things disguised to look like bushes. Anything like that that you've heard of?
I've heard these stories. I never found one of those sensors, but it would make sense because there's a lot of four-legged critters roaming around here, and they are really not concerned about those. There's cows that cross the boundary every day because there's no fence in certain areas of the boundary. So it would make sense to have sensors that can distinguish human intruders from critters.
So if somebody tries to not use the roads, they're going to shimmy through the desert, crawl on their bellies, and try to get in that way. They're going to get caught too. I mean, there are various sensors that will catch them. What happens to them when they get caught? And we've seen some examples of people that have blown through the signs by accident or on purpose, and they get picked up pretty quickly. But what happens to them?
Yeah, I think the reaction really depends on what kind of threat, what level of threat you are. If you're if you're a tourist that is careless enough to cross the boundary at Groom Lake Road, and you just drive a few hundred yards inside the perimeter, they will stop you. They are probably going to get you out of the vehicle. They're going to sort things out. If you are hiking across the desert and you're actively avoiding these sensors, you are a totally different kind of threat. At that point, they will be their response is going to be much more targeted towards you. They will probably bring out the security helicopter to try and detect you. They will be equipped with forward-looking infrared radar units so they can pick you up. Even at night, they can see you in the terrain. And again, if you're a serious threat, if you make active attempts to not be detected, you're really going to be probably arrested by the security forces. Do have the right to detain people. Typically at the perimeter of Groom Lake Road and so forth, the sheriff would come out and you would be handed over to the sheriff. If you're caught, let's say if you make it on foot, you make it a few miles inside the perimeter, you probably wouldn't get handed over to the sheriff right away. You would probably be severely debriefed, and who knows what other punishments would come upon you.
You know, I know that some journalists or people with cameras have had their camera gear confiscated, and I'm not sure if they ever got it back. I know people have been fined and have to go to court. The signs, of course, warn that use of deadly force is authorized. I can't imagine that they actually shoot somebody who's coming across unless they have really serious intent. But you think that they'd be able to repel even a large force of invaders in RVs, regular citizens, something of that sort.
Yes, they certainly have crowd control measures in place to deal with large groups of intruders. They have a lot of security vehicles on standby inside the base, and for events of this magnitude, there's everybody's going to be on board, and everybody's going to be standing by to respond if needed. And again, they have non-lethal crowd control weapons that, it would probably be a nice test for them to actually be able to try these out
I'm sure they're looking forward to it.
sometime. Yeah. And, as far as the deadly force, I do not know of any events of anyone actually being shot by security. There was one event, I think it was last year, somebody on the south side at Mercury somehow drove through the gate. I don't know exactly the background story, but I hear there was alcohol involved and whatnot. That guy made it halfway into the Nevada test site. That is also a highly secure area. And he was ultimately brought down. He was shot. I don't know if he was killed, but he
Oh,
was
he
shot
died.
at the stop.
Yeah, he died.
He did die. Yeah, he did die. That's what I thought. But he wasn't anywhere close to Area 51. He was a threat for other reasons. They just didn't know if there was terrorism involved. There's nukes in that area. So that's the only event, that's the only time that I know of that somebody was actually shot by security in the test site.
Well, let's talk about the base itself and what's out there. First, a general overview. I mean, you love it. You love investigating the stories about technology that's being tested out there. Its place in national security is well established, and I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that Area 51 is one of the places where the Cold War was won. I mean, the programs that were developed out there, the platforms, I mean, it's vital. Still.
That's right. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, still vital, right?
It still is. Yeah, it was. It has been vital for the last 65 years. It started with the U-2 spy plane. We needed to know. We had no way of knowing what was going on in Russia at the height of the Cold War, so we needed to know what they're up to. So we the Lockheed Skunk Works Department developed the U-2 spy plane that was able to fly so high that it couldn't be picked up on enemy radar, and it couldn't be detected, and it couldn't be brought down. When finally the Russians caught up with it, another spy plane was developed, the A-12, also very high flying and in addition very fast. So that was the beginning of Area 51 development of these super classified spy planes. And ever since then, it has been the place where basically where the government goes when it has something that it doesn't want the public to know and they need to test it. Area 51 is a secret facility surrounded by another secret facility. So it has a huge buffer zone around it. And that makes it a perfect location to test anything in secrecy, and the public wouldn't even know that it's there, that it exists.
And it has played a vital role. We know a little bit about it because of some things that were allowed to be released by T.D. Barnes and the Roadrunners. It's so exciting, for so long. It was on maps, it was announced, and then it disappeared for a while, and they wouldn't even acknowledge that the base existed, which I think helped create some of the mythos around it. But now it's been acknowledged, and the CIA has allowed the release of photographs and documents related to the early era of Area 51, and it's terrific to see that stuff because it's such an important part of our history.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, it's so amazing to talk to these guys that worked there in total secrecy back in the 50s. They worked on these super cool planes. Some of them flew those planes, and they couldn't even tell their wives what they were doing. They would fly out in the morning or on Monday, and some of them wouldn't even come back until Friday night, and they couldn't tell their families where they were, what they did. And now finally, as you said, it has been declassified, and they can talk about it and tell their families and friends and the public about it. They have these symposiums every once in a while where they talk about these early projects, and it is just fascinating to listen to them.
The idea that secrets cannot be kept. You hear that all the time. Oh, nobody can keep secrets. Everything leaks out. But secrets can be kept. Secrets are kept, right?
Oh, yeah. Secrets are kept all the time. They are so good at keeping secrets. If they don't want something to get out, it will not get out. There's entire prototypes and entire technology demonstrators that we never even knew about, and all of a sudden they show up in a museum and they say, well, yeah, we have this, we developed this. Sorry, we forgot to tell you about it. they have this down so good. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to be talking about the B-21 in some more detail. That's the big thing there right now. And, you know, for years now, there's been speculation about the B-21, about the new bomber. It's pretty much talked about quite openly, and nobody even knows what it looks like. It has never been seen, never been photographed, and we are pretty certain that it's been flying for at least a few months now.
So you get to see things flying around in the sky on occasion. I don't know if it's all the time or not, but certainly often enough that it keeps things humming on your website, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's little sightings here and there. And, you know, sometimes you put together the pieces of the puzzle and somebody from Plant 42 sees something. Plant 42 is where a lot of the development takes place in Palmdale. Somebody sees something there. Somebody in the ranges sees something. Then, as it was the case a couple of weeks ago, there was all these no-fly zones all of a sudden, temporary flight restriction zones declared on a weekend around Area 51. So we know something super secret was flying there.
I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get into what it might have been, what else might be flying around out there. Our guest is Jorg Arnu, DreamlandResort.com. We'll be right back. Steve Miller takes us into the break. Fly like an eagle.